I'll be almost 30. That's fine with me.
Speaking of being almost 30, did Bo Burnham's song about turning 30?
Oh yeah, it hit me. It hit me hard.
I do that dance in front of Bev. at least once every couple days. I can hear her laughing in the background.
That's funny.
I'm not bold enough to do it just in my undies, but yeah. I do it.
Oh man. Yeah, no, I think that's a great example. I watch the Bo Burnham special and I'm like, wow, masterpiece, genius even.
It's
so good. You talk to someone older than us or younger than us and they don't agree. And to me, I'm just like, oh, everyone loves this, right? But it's not true. It's made for our generation.
Is that right?
It's true.
I mean, I haven't taken a poll.
Yeah, but... yeah. I actually just learned this today.
That's wild.
You're right.
See, it's weird because I even think about it going one way because I think that my parents wouldn't find it funny, but I would think that the people younger than us would find it funny. Does it just not click? Are there...
Yeah, it's a very specific millennial... Literally, there's a song about turning 30.
Right.
Yeah, so it just doesn't click for them.
Side note, one of the things I think is so magical about that special is some of the songs, I wasn't there when it first started. I was like, what is this? I don't get it yet.
Uh-huh.
But as you let the special sink and you watch it multiple times, you listen to the sound, like the stuff they posted on Apple Music or Spotify.
Right.
It's just, it gets funnier.
Yeah.
It really does get funnier.
I've been listening to it in the car, like just.
Absolutely.
Just bumping it, like, because there's some jams on there. And real quick, and we're going to get right back into this conversation after I say this, just real quick. Welcome to Dropped Frames, where we discuss the adaptations of popular video games and why they work or don't as they drop from 60 to 24 frames. Okay. Carry on. Bo Burnham.
Jeffrey Bezos.
And scene.
Good podcast. Good
yeah. Podcast. We're doing a show not about that. but we've talked about it at length at this point. My name is Josh. That's Chris. Alec is coming.
Some say he's stuck in a cage.
He might be stuck in a cage somewhere. We will update you as we know more. But we are...
The news.
Yeah. Breaking news. Alec still stuck in the cage. But this is the Drop Frame Podcast. We are going to be talking about Castlevania Season 1 today. And I'm pretty excited about it. I'm a little nervous about it, actually, because we haven't talked about something that is just good yet.
What a wild thing to say, because I was actually thinking while I was working today, you know, as one does, thinking about podcasts while they're working.
Of course.
What an incredible... We'll get into this, but what an incredible piece of art in the animation and show, I guess, show slash movie space compared to what we
right. And that's what so makes far. Me nervous about it is because that we, you know, we joke about those things that don't make sense that in the movies, and that's what makes a fun show. And I think we're gonna really be learning a lot about how to do this kind of episode, because. Mm-hmm. This is a very competent, very beautiful, very well-written, very well-acted piece of video game adaptation for the first time on the show. So we're gonna see how that goes. And let's talk about some of the brilliant people who brought it to life. It was created and written by Warren Ellis, animated by Powerhouse Animation. It is starring Richard Armitage as Trevor Belmont. I'm not going to say enough good things about him throughout the rest of this episode. James Callis as Alucard, Alejandra Reynoso as Sifa, Graham McTavish as Dracula and Matt Frewer as the Bishop. And a quick synopsis. When Dracula's human wife is burned at the stake for practicing science, which they think is witchcraft, Dracula unleashes a demonic army on the people of the town and the world at large. As the terrified population grapples with their new reality, it is up to the disgraced monster hunter, Trevor Belmont, to hunt down Dracula and end the curse.
Quick sidebar. I love the synopsis idea. We should probably do that, like, quick synopsis for what we're doing.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing for this one and the last one. So I've kind of been, we're going to be doing that moving forward. Cast and animation and writing. Quick thoughts.
Just incredible. I want to start with the cast because you're absolutely right. Every single one of them nailed it. Mm-hmm. I usually can pick up on voice actors. This one, I couldn't, which I think is a good sign, which means they can delve into their character. Oddly enough, I don't know if this is odd, but the portrayal of the Bishop, wow, like,
yeah, I hated and you that know, guy. Yes, I hate, and you know what is so funny, and we're gonna jump around a little bit here, but in that episode where he, spoilers, dies, right. I was thinking to myself in that episode, I was like, they have something so good here. Like, under no circumstances will I ever hate Dracula as much as I hate this Bishop.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they have to keep him around, right? But how satisfying it was to see him die. Oh, they just did that so good. And I was thinking during that episode, I was like, I hate that I'm probably not going to see him die yet, because they have to keep him as this other villain, but also I really want to. And then for it to happen like that, I was like, yeah, I'll take this here. This is good. Yeah. I'll let them figure it out for the next season or whatever, who else I'm going to not like. But this one, yeah, yes. He did a great job as someone I did not want to root for.
Absolutely. Great, great first arc villain.
Yeah.
Animation in the show, incredible. So the Netflix originals animations, I don't know if I haven't come around on them yet. I don't know about you, Josh, but I don't know if the style is for me. And it seems like they, not that they're the same studio, but it seems like there's definitely a trend in the animated features that Netflix is featuring on their front page. It's this Castlevania, the same look as what's the Titans. One with Greek mythology?
Oh, I would say it looks very Attack on Titans to me.
Well, maybe that's an inspiration, but there's a Greek mythology one. There's a couple more that kind of have the same look, but for some reason, whatever time and quality and just differences that made Castlevania what it is, it's just a beautiful piece. I loved it.
Yeah, absolutely. Major shout outs to the animation studio. It was made out of Powerhouse Animation, and it's just gorgeous looking. Like, watch every scene just looks beautiful. And then I said I'm not going to say enough good things about Richard Armitage as Trevor Belmont here, our lead. It just knocks it out of the park. From the minute we meet him at the end of that first episode, he's just so likable, and you get mm-hmm. his character in the performance right away of, like we said, the disgraced monster hunter from a wealthy and well-known background. So, like, he comes from kind of this well-known, well-off family, the Belmonts, a family of monster hunters. And, like, you can hear it in him that he's, mm-hmm. like, he has that behind him, but also, like, he's kind of washed up, mm-hmm. and he's, you know, like this. He says it throughout this entire season. I'm out of practice, right? Every time someone, like, gives him any shit about anything, he always says, what, I'm out of practice, or, like, I'm retired or whatever. And there's that kind of, like, that insecurity there. Like, I should be better than this. I am better than this, but I'm, like, you know, I'm out of practice. And he gives that excuse a lot. And just the performance and the writing of that too is so good.
Yeah, definitely. The I like what you said about, you know, how he's kind of portraying a lot of that through just through the voice acting alone. You can tell in the beginning, you know, he's kind of disgraced, he's in a bar, he's disgruntled. He's a little out of sorts, but he still has that air of, you know, the, what comes with royalty, arrogance, sass.
Yeah.
And it carries throughout. And he even has this next layer of when it comes to combat, he turns on a switch of a bit more seriousness. And it's incredible just what he's doing with that character.
Yeah. And then another great character moment of his when he is basically forcing the speakers out of the town for the night. And it's that righteous arrogance of like, no, I'm telling you, you need to leave because if you don't, you're going to die. And I'm going to go and prove to you what happens in the catacombs here so that you leave because I'm right and you're wrong, even when trying to save them. Like, it's just, it carries throughout his character throughout the whole thing. Super, super strong character work in the acting and the writing there for Trevor Belmont. Maybe my favorite character that we've covered so far in the show.
Belmont is?
Yeah.
I like that.
So good. All right, let's talk a little bit about episode one, the inciting action here. Dracula. Dracula is obviously a big part of Castlevania series. He's a vampire, for those of you who may not know about the story of Dracula. One of the more famous vampires in vampire lore.
He might be up there. Top five, at least.
Yeah, at least, yeah. Somewhere in there. We open with the scene of him basically meeting this human woman who wants to practice science under Dracula. And she is like, they kind of have like this battle of wits, this very back and forth talk. And long story short, they fall in love and he kind of becomes a better vampire, I guess. And through her, and she learns science under him, and they fall in love and they get married, and they are a nice, happy couple. And Dracula isn't killing people anymore. That's good because of her. Until the bishop catches wind of her sorcery of practicing science and burns her alive. And then Dracula is like, okay, well, that's, you didn't want to do that. And then he unleashes an army of demons on them a year later. For them to come back from the credits to her just burning, I was like, is that her?
Same.
I really thought that like their relationship was going to go on longer, but it's just like they smack you in the face with that moment.
Not only was I like, is that her? I thought, this can't be her.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
This is not the premise of the show. I thought the premise of the show was perhaps their supremacy together or something.
Right. Yeah, but for that to be it, I was like, oh my God, like they're going here. Like they really like pulled that out like so quick, and it just like it hits you so hard because they portray their relationship really well, really quickly.
Yeah, really quickly. This first episode is only maybe like 23-24 minutes running time, and I think within the first 5-7 minutes minus the credits, they already hit you in the feels, right? They hit you quick with this is how they met, this is why they fell in love, she's a righteous lady, he's not a very likable guy, but she wants to better him. And then all of a sudden, like you said, let's take away the only good thing that this guy has going for him. Oh, by the way, he's Dracula, and he's here to destroy the world now because he's not happy.
Yeah, and it all happened while he was on a vacation.
Oh my God.
Which his wife told him he needs to. It's like a real life guy who just is too married to his job. Hey, you need to take a vacation once in a while. Story, but with Dracula. And then while he's gone, his wife gets burned alive, and then he has to unleash hell upon the world.
I was going to say, what a gut-wrenching, like, scene when he comes back to you. I don't, you probably felt the same way, but when he comes back and he sees the burnt down house and the lady's explaining, no, you can't go save her. She's already been burned. You feel how pissed he is. And I loved that they set the tone with every good villain, I think, has a reason to be a villain and has a reason to be angry. Mm-hmm. And it's wild when a villain like Dracula can kind of bring you along in his sympathy, in sympathizing with him. And I think that's a really strong early tone from the show.
Yeah, and this is another moment. And I think this is just going to be a general theme throughout this, that the writing and the voice acting meet so well. The performance here by Graham McTavish as Dracula portrays that very well. But then also mm-hmm. with the moment of even this woman who is maybe the only person in town who is like, this wasn't right. I don't agree with this. I'm here to pay respects to this woman who was my friend and who I knew to be good. And this shouldn't have happened. For him to even say to her, like, you need to leave or else you're going to get the same. You're no different than anyone else to me. Like, the cruelty is there immediately, even to the people who liked her and were on their side. And I was like, oh man, like, that's how you know it's bad. And so, yeah, just really good. Again, performance portrayed it very well. And then that's exactly what happened. And then the arrogance of the church to be like, look at this guy was all talk. Nothing happened. We're fine. And then literally raining down like demons and blood from the sky.
Yeah. Blood and baby demon fetus rain.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, man, yes. That's another thing I was going to say. Mortal Kombat had nothing on this show as far as the grotesque gore and violence.
Yeah, there was a couple panels during that rain of blood where they kind of just panned over and did some freeze frames on people that were like cut in half and disembodied and their organs just out of their body. It was wild.
How many different times did we see like a person's eye with like the cord attached to the back?
Yeah.
Like just flying through the air. Disgusting. But in animation, I guess it's a little easier.
Yeah, I could probably get away with it a little bit more.
But yeah, just that was my first thought, was like, wow, Mortal Kombat was not this bloody and disgusting.
And then towards the end of this episode, I think, is when we meet one of our protagonists.
Yes, it is. We have a trio of protagonists technically, but yeah, we meet the Trevor Belmont. We've talked a lot about him, but yeah, his introduction is great. It's in a little tavern. There are two guys, honestly, I don't disagree with them. This main guy in their conversation, he's talking about like, you know, all the royalty, the royal families, they're safe. They are up in their towers, you know, like we're the ones down here getting killed, or we don't have food and like all this stuff. And kind of like a lot of the characters, even the minor ones in this case, are very complex and they have reasons to think the way that they do. And he doesn't like the Belmonts because they are, to him, like just this rich family that doesn't care about them. And he has reason to believe that. And then to find out who Trevor Belmont is, they get in a little squabble. They kick him out of the tavern. And that's kind of showing Trevor Belmont's first meeting of him, is that like, yeah, he's great in a fight and all, but he's also, he likes to drink. He doesn't have a home to live in. He sleeps like under trees, looking for trees to sleep under every night. And yeah, he's kind of lost his touch a little bit, and he gets thrown out of the tavern by the other people.
He does. It's interesting that we talked about this a little bit, but it's interesting that we get kind of who he is at this point just from a bar fight. We kind of understand exactly where he's coming from, who this guy is, his disgrace, really. Mm-hmm. All from this, you know, squabble with these gentlemen in the bar, calling him out, and him not really denying any of it, but sort of correcting them in some of the things that they're saying. As we go through the series, or at least this first season, we kind of see that, the monster hunting thing is a really important aspect of this world. And one of the running themes of the show is people and groups of people becoming scapegoats from the majority. And we can kind of see that early on that his family is one of these scapegoats, this group of people that hunted monsters to protect the people.
Yeah, and then banished by the church.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Yeah, it's and we're gonna meet another group that is kind of this latest scapegoat in the second episode right after that. Necropolis. The Trevor Belmont goes to the city of Gresset that is basically being every night the demons come to this town and they just kill everybody they can. And the speakers happen to be coming through. They're like this traveling, like, how would you describe them?
They're do-gooders in the sense of they want to support the poor and the needy, and they just have good intentions towards those that need help. But they're also outcasts. Not much is understood about them. They have traditions and word of mouth passed down, history, an oral history, mm-hmm. that because the majority of people don't understand and fall under this the bigger religion of the world, which is a direct relation to Christianity, because they don't understand this other group, they're kind of looked as outsiders.
Right, yeah, and then, like you said, everything is word of mouth. They absolutely refuse to write anything down. And they're nomadic. They don't settle down. Mm-hmm. They're always traveling. So by the time that they were kind of taking shelter in this town, that's when the nightly demon raids began. So it was very easy for the church to say, well, this is the reason. We have to go kill them all. And everyone in the town, once again, and this is another recurring theme, everyone in the town agrees. And they're like, yes, we do need to do that, which is one of the things that was brought up about Dracula's wife, and that everyone just watched. If they weren't cheering on, they weren't trying to stop it. So that makes them equally guilty in the eyes of Dracula and why he is unleashing terror on the world at large and not just the people involved. And then that's what everyone says. We need to find who actually did this. It's not, it doesn't make sense to take this out on everybody. And that's, we'll get to that at the end of the season, which ends. I did a chef's kiss. You can't see it, but.
Oh, I felt it.
I think the listener's going to feel it too. Mm-hmm. This is me channeling my inner voice actor. I'm really pushing that through to the audience just with my voice.
And just like classical voice actors, you had to explain what you were doing.
Yeah. Actually, fun segue. This was a thought that I had. This is very non-anime, in my opinion, in the way that it is very good at showing me, not telling me. And I think a lot of animes will have a full 5-minute monologue about why they're doing the thing they're doing a lot of the time. And this, I think, like we said with we get a lot of Trevor Belmont's character in that first bar fight, as opposed to I'm Trevor Belmont and I feel this way because of all of this stuff. Maybe that's bias of me, but I think a lot of anime can be very telly in that way. And in this case, it's very showy.
Mm-hmm. Drop Frames podcast, where we take shots at anime.
And it's just a little, I like a lot of anime. I don't watch a lot of anime, but I've seen animes that I really enjoy. So just my take. Just my take. I'm sorry.
Spicy.
We won't put that one in the highlight.
Okay.
keep that one buried in the middle people. Of this episode.
So I think that's, I think for the second episode, that's the synopsis. I think that we want, is it the second or the third? They kind of blend together as you watch them, but the Seekers need Trevor Belmont to find the Head Seeker's daughter. And that kind of puts him on his first adventure of the show, I think.
Yes, and the first and the third episode starts with him actually going out to find her. And that right before that, at the end of the second episode, that's when he does the whole, I'm going to go do this, and if I do this, you all are going to leave tonight. Like, you absolutely have to, or you're going to die one way or another. Right. Either all these townspeople are going to kill you because they think that's what they have to do to save their town, or you're going to get eaten by the demon monsters. And that's what he goes out to do. And he finds that there is a cyclops in the catacombs. He has a rough time with it. It's a great fight.
No, it's wonderful. The one thing we haven't really touched on yet are the fight scenes that we talked about, the bar fight, but the real fight scenes in the show, especially with Trevor Belmont, and the work they do with just the acrobatics and the way they move and the way he uses his whip and his sword. It's just, yeah. It's a gorgeous look. And it's funny because the earlier Castlevanias, when you use your whip at, you know, because it's at the behest of 8/16-bit parameters of a video game,
right,
the whip is just going forward or up or whatever.
Yeah,
but the way they've imagined the way a weaponized whip should work and the way the body would move to make it, you know, attack the way it does, it's, I can't say too many good things about it. It's just, it's great.
It has, like, you get the sense in the best way that the animators were like playing these original games like as kids or something. And this is, and that's, I think, what a lot of people, when they think back on playing NES, SNES games and how much of the imagination it is left up to, like what you're actually physically doing,
because
of the limitations of the hardware, that this is like what they were imagining then. And like the way that Trevor Belmont moves, and he's like, he is very swift, and the way that he like does dodges and stuff is really cool looking. And then incorporating, like you said, incorporating the whip and the blade into that, it just, it's so fluid, and it looks so, like he's so, he has, I feel like a kid, like watching a cool action thing when I'm younger and being like, I want to be able to do that, or I want to play pretend like I'm doing that. Really, really well done.
Yeah, definitely. Just like that little kid mentality of watching a really old NES SNES game come to fruition. And I feel like they probably had to study some people doing some whip work, right? Because I feel like every little detail about what Belmont was doing, you know, it felt like it was thought about, felt like it was every little piece had to do something with his actions to make the whip do what it does.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I was looking too closely as far as like the actual, like real world physics of the whip. Like, I don't know how a whip behaves.
Oh, you don't do whip studies.
I'm not doing lassos on the rag. No. I'm not using whips too often, but, you know, it just, I think a lot was put into the visual of this is going to look really cool. And they pulled it off, like surpassed any expectation of how cool it should look. Really loved it. But this is where we meet the second of our trio. And that is Sypha, who is she can do magic, which is cool. What do they call them in this? Everyone has a different word for a magic doer.
I didn't write it down, but I know what you mean. Even within the Seekers. Her role is different.
Yeah. So she does magic. And she's very good at it, and she becomes instrumental in the final showdown of the final episode, which is freaking awesome in like every way. like everything that happens in that last episode is so good. But I think it's the end of the third episode where they are actually gonna be like the villagers are coming to the house to like burn it down and kill them.
Yeah, and Belmont is telling them that they have to leave. He did the job they asked.
Yeah.
Belmont's telling them that they have to leave. And they're like, no.
They still don't leave.
And then camera out.
Okay, yeah. So then that's when the villagers, they're knocking on their doors, and they're all gone except for Trevor Belmont. And he's just the only one in the house that they're staying in. And he's led them all to the catacombs to hide out there, basically. And he's like gonna take on all these people by himself, or like he's just gonna like try to talk them down or whatever. And then of course that doesn't work. So he kind of has to convince them that, hey, these priests aren't like, they're not your friends. They want to turn you against people. They want power. They are, you know, they're not, they don't have your best interests at heart. I don't even think some of these guys are priests, because that guy just pulled a knife out. And right. When's the last time you've seen that happen? A priest holding a knife. And then people are all kind of like, whoa, what? And then he fights that one guy.
the one priest, or fake priest.
Yeah, the one fake priest. He fights him to kind of like start to show everyone like speaking reason to try to these people, which I kind of having lived through the past year or so wonder how well that works anymore, but you know.
Wait, which part?
trying to speak reason to
great point.
Explain to them, hey, like, you've been kind of taken advantage of here. Here is what's going on. Will you now see the truth of it? And I think maybe more often than not, the answer is no.
Yeah, maybe this is probably one of the few points where I was like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Because they spent three episodes. One of the big themes, as we talked about, is kind of this mob mentality and majority listening to, you know, the powers that be, even if they're wrong.
Correct.
Mob will believe what the mob believes. So on the fourth episode, we're just all of a sudden supposed to believe, oh, yeah, well, they understand reason and they get it now.
Yeah, it's more of the truth has been hidden from you, and now that I'm showing you, you'll understand, as opposed to these people are reinforcing your already held beliefs. So they're just strengthening that and using that against you. So it makes it much harder. But yeah, for them to flip so easily and then everyone work together to take on the other threat, you know, that's to be fair, 2017, this came out. we've had too much experience with that kind of discourse over the past year, so we're seeing it from a different lens, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. So this fight scene that now we've stepped into, I really enjoyed, because there, first off, we have the people fighting on our side. We have Belmont there fighting side by side with Sifa, both, you know, with his different weapons, different tools, which is a cool nod to Castlevania, using all his different gadgets. Mm-hmm. And then Sifa using her magic, and we start to get a sense of some of the shall we say rules of the spiritual world, because what I really liked was he used holy water
blessed,
and it actually hurt the demons, like real, and he was like, oh well, I guess that guy really was a priest. So
yeah,
I like
that's how we can like sniff out the real priests too.
yeah and I loved how they incorporated like a rule like that. Like I love when they do some world building around some of the stuff that can actually affect mythological creatures, in this case the demons.
Yeah I think in those cases, like, go for it. Like, we don't know like the extent of Sifa's powers. Like, Can you make fire? Oh yeah, sure. Can you also make ice? Of course. Element stuff. Why not? So yeah, and I think I have a hunch. It was very hard for me to not continue on, but I'm sure we will cover the remaining seasons as we continue to do the podcast. But I'm sure we will find out even more about what she can do as we go on. And I think she's a really cool character as part of this trio. She is very much the antithesis to Trevor Belmont. She's a believer. She is like just traveling, kind of like she's not of royalty, certainly. And you know, she wants to believe that there's this good and they can fight it out, like fight out the bad and lift up the good. And he is very jaded. He's kind of torn down. He's has this banishment, but they ultimately have the same goal. So I like the two of them together. And we will, after driving out the demons from this town, they believed, or the speakers believed, that there is a hero sleeping beneath the town. And that's like their biggest point of contention is Trevor Belmont's like, there's no hero sleeping beneath the town that's going to wake up and save everybody. Like, that's just not going to happen. When they fall, they like end up falling through. How do they fall through again? Was that from the fight?
I don't think it was from the fight. I forget how, but yeah, they fall through the original cave that they found Sifa in, right? Yes. And they fall pretty deep.
They fall for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, and getting through it is like they're going through all these like these gears and like these huge like mechanical spaces. And Trevor is kind of starting to put it together, like what this is and how it got there. That this is it, and I think this is right. And maybe this is I'm just like reading into this, but he's starting to figure out that this is the moving castle of Dracula. Is that correct?
I think he thinks it's Dracula's home, mm-hmm. but I don't think this is Dracula's home. I think this is a base that Alucard set up underneath the city, but I could be wrong. Okay. Maybe they'll tell us in season two.
Maybe. So they're kind of moving through this area and they happen upon the what do we call it? A coffin? The coffin. It's a coffin.
Yeah. That Alucard is in.
It's like, what do you be dead in?
What do the vampires sleep in? Do they sleep? What is this podcast?
Yeah, I mean, technically they are dead in them also. They're just also conscious.
Coffin.
Yeah, so Alucard is here, and Alucard wakes up, and Sifa's like, oh my god, it's true, like, it's real, like, this is the hero, and Belmont's like, no, this is a vampire, we are in big trouble. And he knows right away he's going to have to fight this thing, this vampire, and so they have the coolest fight ever.
They really do. Belmont and Alucard go at it mano a mano, kind of like a macho kind of showing. Yeah. But one of the things I really loved is Belmont again gets to show off his weaponry, the different styles he shows, and it's kind of a more brash jack of all trades weapons master. Mm-hmm. And then you have the juxtaposition of Alucard with his sword, which is more rapier like and he has a more like fencer style, like a proper fighting style, which is such a cool antithesis to you know what's happening with Belmont's fighting style. And we get to see them duke it out. Belmont gets some shots in, and then we see Alucard, which is one of my favorite things I think I've seen in the show so far, his little teleport dodge thing where it's kind of like how when Flash goes super fast and there's things behind him, little Flash behind him, he does the same thing, and like he gets around Belmont a couple times. And you said it, this fight scene is just incredible.
Yeah, and another instance, much like that bar fight scene, of showing us Alucard's character and even their relationship, the two of them, through the fight. And like exactly you said it perfectly, juxtaposing them together, their different fighting styles, but also having that within their character as well. And it show, again, Belmont's arrogance. He's kind of like, don't you know who I am? I'm a Belmont. I'm a monster hunter, vampire slayer. Like you met your match here or whatever. And then them fighting it out, and this being like such a tough matchup for him. And it just, the animation again, just everything in every scene. I feel like I could say the same thing about every scene of this is the voice acting, the animation, the story that's being told, the writing. This four episodes, man, it just came together so tight and just beginning to end. I watched the whole thing. I just binged the whole thing in a morning, and it was so hard for me not to continue watching, but just so good. And now we have our team. Alucard, you know, he does not kill Trevor Belmont at the end of the fight and tells him who he is. He is Dracula's son, and also the son of his mother, who was burned alive. And he agrees that Dracula, he went too far this time. Daddy went too far. and he wants to set it right. And then we have our team that's going to set up the rest of the series, of these three, of this band of heroes taking on Dracula.
It was the four episode season one was an incredible tease to the end of episode four. I feel like at the end, when we get the three heroes, we understand what the mission is now. We have a little bit of backstory, but I can't imagine, because this is the first exposure you and I have had to the Castlevania show. I can't imagine the people that watch this at release waiting for that next season, because we don't have to wait. We're waiting voluntarily because of the podcast, but it's really just a lead up to what I think the series is going to be about. And now we have the start of the real adventure, the full adventure.
Yeah, there's a lesser version, I think, of this show that just starts with season two, and through like conversations or like just context stuff, we get the story of how the three of them met and like what happened. And there's like just someone at the bar as we are just showing like an exposition shot of like, oh, but since the curse, nothing's been the same or whatever. But I think showing this and kind of giving this four episodes to give the audience or to show the audience, like, this is the competency we're working with here. This is what you have to look forward to. Will you come on the rest of this journey? And I'm like, absolutely. I cannot wait to cover the second season and the rest of these seasons. We got to talk about how we're going to actually do that, because I'm dying to watch it. Just really knocked it out of the park. Is this my favorite thing we've covered? It's very hard to kind of put Sonic the Hedgehog and Castlevania on a scale and say, well, this is better, because they're obviously very different. But I certainly enjoyed this a lot.
And this was this was an adult meal, is what it is. This is everything you want in a piece of cinematic art. You get in this short season one, which I think is a fair thing to compare with the rest of what we've seen and covered on this podcast. Whereas there are bits and pieces of magic in the other pieces, but nothing as full fledged as at least this season one of Castlevania.
Dare I say, this is the Hungry Man to Sonic's Kid Cuisine.
Incredible. Although I don't think I've had a Hungry Man or Kid Cuisine in forever. Was Kid Cuisine the one with the penguin on it?
Yeah. I can say I've only ever had a Kid Cuisine. I have never had a Hungry Man.
I remember I thought those were going to be so good. And looking back at it, oh God. Anyway, before we get too off topic, I didn't want to touch on, because on this podcast we've talked about themes and interesting character dynamic. I really like, and I know you mentioned it before with Belmont and Sypha, I love the three protagonists. Do we call them tritagonists? What's the word?
The trio,
the three musketeers.
Yeah, that's it.
I love how they all have the similar sense of duty and responsibility that they have to get through. But they all have to, they're all trying to come at it from a different angle.
Yeah, they all have very different motivations for doing the same thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. With Belmont having, you know, this family history that he has to uphold, he has the skills to do it, but he's kind of doing it out of responsibility, out of what he's just known his whole life, and there's a sort of reluctance. And then, just as you said, juxtapose with Sypha, how she's doing it because she's generally a good person. She wants to do it, and she has the means to do it. And her religion, the Seekers, that's what they do. And there's nothing stopping her. And then enter Alucard, a totally different motivation. His is about his mother. It's about fulfilling what she would have done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's what she would have wanted, and it's his, and it's a family matter. He feels he needs to be involved and be the one to put an end to this.
Dare I quote the most famous franchise we've talked about on the show, Fast and the Furious, and say it's about family?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, once again, it all comes back to family. Wow, there is just so much we can learn from Fast and the Furious.
I mean, there's not 8-9 movies for no reason.
It's true. It's very true. We're gonna have to do like a bonus, like just run down the Fast and Furious movies for this show.
Absolutely.
It's not, you know, I'm sure there's a Fast and Furious game.
Whoa, there's one coming. Now that you say that.
What?
So, at one of the shows, I don't know which one it was, they literally brought out Vin Diesel and Michelle Rodriguez, our two favorite people on this podcast besides James Marsden.
This year?
To come out. No, this was like a couple years ago. Oh. To come out and talk about a Fast and the Furious game being produced. So, I mean,
I have a vague memory of that. But I think I mean, nothing's happened, so.
Right. Or maybe it has, and the, you know, sad face.
But yeah, that would be unfortunate.
It's about family.
Michelle Rodriguez was there?
She was.
Resident Evil's Michelle Rodriguez?
She was crazed.
She was crazed. She bit me. Oh, man. Wow. Yeah, we're gonna have to, we'll figure that out. We'll figure out how to, I'm sure we could kind of, in a roundabout way, justify doing the Fast and Furious movies on the show. It's a movie podcast more than a video game podcast in a lot of ways, so.
You don't have to convince me.
Yeah. What else should we plan live on the record? what do you got coming on this weekend?
Probably more of Fast and Furious future planning.
All right. Yeah, that sounds great to me. I'll meet you there. Okay. Chris, final thoughts on Castlevania Netflix season one.
Castlevania Netflix.
It's called that, right? Castlevania Netflix season one.
Oh my God. I need that title card. Castlevania on Netflix season one. Castlevania season one on Netflix. Just. What a brilliant piece of cinematography, animation, as we already talked about multiple times. Probably so far my favorite thing that we've covered. It was just well done from the voice acting, the animation, the characters, the character development in the short span that we have, and just getting their history. What an incredible villain in Dracula. And at sometimes, probably most of the time, we actually side with him, which is a fun thing to do in a show like this. I'm very excited. I think this was a great start. I love all the characters. I love the animation. I love the fighting. And I'm excited to cover the rest of the seasons.
Absolutely. I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but just everything came together. This feels like everyone involved were all like, and I know this is not how things are made in the professional filmmaking and television making world, but it feels like literally everybody involved got in a room and was like, hey guys, we love Castlevania. Let's do this game justice. Let's give it everything we can possibly give it, and just act, write, animate, design the hell out of this thing. No pun intended. Hell out of 10. Thank you. And they absolutely nailed it on all fronts. I am enamored by the acting in this. Amazing performances across the board, especially Trevor Belmont, just completely sold me from the minute we saw him. The animation, fluid, beautiful, amazing. The writing, the characterization, just so good. I agree with you. The best thing that we have covered, or at least my favorite thing that we have covered so far, because I do think it's a little unfair to put this against some of the other stuff that we've done. But just is operating on another level. This is, why are we not talking about this as far as like, when are video game adaptations gonna do the thing and be really good? This is it. This is so, it's perfect. It's great. It's so good. And I cannot wait to continue. We're gonna figure that out at some point when we're gonna be covering season two, because I gotta watch this as soon as possible.
Yeah. And something you said earlier too, that was really important, that I think I glossed over, but you called the show tight, and it really is. It's condensed to, I think, a perfect just 20 to 30 minute, 4-episode season. And there is everything within the season, I think, was necessary to be there. And it just made for a wonderful, like, bite-sized series.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the genius of this first season, is that someone along the line made the decision, let's just make the best 4 episodes we can. Yes. Let's not worry about making this a 10, 15-episode season. And let's just set this up, 4 episodes, get people hooked, and... Yeah, that's like I said, like everyone in the room at once making this cohesive vision come to life. And that was part of it. And just, yeah, I can't say enough good things about this show. We could do another hour on this show, and I could continue to find little things. But yeah, just, I'm going to leave it at, I can't wait to continue watching.
Absolutely.
Well, everyone, thank you for listening. Alec never joined us, so we can assume that he is still stuck in a cage somewhere. I hope he's okay. It's pretty unfortunate. we'll update you next time on if he got out or not. We also may post about it on Twitter, where you can follow us at droppedframepod. You can also send us an email at droppedframespod@gmail.com. Talk to us about Castlevania. Talk to us about any other video game movies you might want to see us talk about. We might feature it on the show if you write in. Definitely hang out with us over on Twitter. I have some things planned, which I teased to Chris a little earlier today. Just been occupying some of my free time in a fun way. Let's say that.
We should also have everybody speculate perhaps where Alec is.
Yeah, if you guys want to, if you have any tips about, if you know anything, please let us know, because we're worried about our friend. let us know about where Alec might be with the hashtag Where's Alec? Oh my
God. I hope it trends.
Could you imagine? Everyone's like, is this guy okay?
It's like a whole news segment about how he's like missing and like no one really knows where he is.
Oh my God. No one,
but then like the world doesn't really know who he is, and it'll be amazing.
I do want to say for the record that we know where he, like, he didn't like just not show up to the record. Everything's okay. I feel like that's important to get out there.
I would have let it go. And then, like, next podcast, he's just not here, and we don't even address it.
Oh, my God.
That would be the ultimate, just like, what the heck happened?
Not okay. Well, everyone, thank you again for joining us. Chris, it was a pleasure talking to you about this wonderful show.
Yeah, pleasure's all mine, and I hope we can get Alec on the next one to talk about it.
Yeah, we will have to get his updated, his thoughts, because, yeah, again, I could talk about this show all day. And again, we'll cover the next season. But until then, everybody, thank you for watching, listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.